John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, April 30th, 2012. Palestinian fighter killed and three others injured in Gaza, while Palestinian political detainees in Israeli jails continue their hunger strike. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. One Hamas fighter was killed and three others wounded near Jabalia in the northern Gaza Strip during what the Al-Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, described as a training mission. Medical sources at the European hospital in Khan Yunis stated that the body of 24-year-old Ahmed Abu Wada was severely injured by an explosion and that three others were hospitalised. The Al-Qassam Brigade stated that their fighters will always remain alert and will defend their country. Several fighters have been killed and wounded before in similar training incidents in the Gaza Strip. In other news, it's been revealed in a report issued by the Palestinian Ministry of Detainees that the demands of hunger-striking Palestinians in Israeli detention were discussed at a meeting in the Hadarim prison between senior detained political leaders and the head of the Israeli administration, Aharon Franco. The detainees who met Franco were Marwan Barghouti, Dabit Mardawi, Abdel Nasser Issa, Karim Yunis and Nasser Abu Surur. Franco called the meeting and stated that the special committee tasked with discussing the detainees' demands had concluded its work and will respond within 10 days. The latest development came while two political detainees, Bilal Thiab and Tahir Halahla, continued their open-ended hunger strike started 2 months ago. Palestinian political detainees in Israeli military jails are making demands which include ending solitary confinement policies, allowing visits to Gaza Strip detainees, and ending the use of administrative detention policy by the Israeli government against Palestinian political prisoners. There are more than 4,600 Palestinian political prisoners held by Israel, according to latest figures published by the Ad-Damir Prisoner Support Association on April the 17th, Palestinian Prisoners' Day. And that's all for today from IMEMC News. This was Monday, the April the 30th, daily roundup of news from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hossam Kassis and William Temple.
Afghanistan today. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, Sunday. A suicide attack on a convoy in Nimroz was reported to injure two NATO troops and two Afghan police. No further details have been released. NATO has yet to confirm the news. Afghanistan, Saturday. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, Saturday. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in eastern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, Saturday. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from a non-combat cause. Is this yet another GI suicide? Pakistan, yesterday. A suspected U.S. drone strike killed three people at a high school in northern Pakistan where militants were said to be hiding, intelligence officials reported. Some Pakistani legislators are now saying the U.S. can forget about resuming supply of NATO forces in Afghanistan through Pakistan after this violation of their territory. Afghanistan, Saturday. A provincial governor barely escaped assassination after Taliban fighters concealed sidearms in their shoes and managed to enter his compound. They made it through the first two checkpoints before guards at a third checkpoint noticed something suspicious and tried to stop them. The attackers then opened fire, killing the guards, and captured their weapons. The resulting gun battle lasted 30 minutes, but the governor escaped. Two undetonated car bombs were found in the streets outside. Mr. Barack Obama, this has been going on in Afghanistan since the Russians were the occupation force of the day. You cannot win. In the aftermath of the Koran burning, two incidents of desecration of the dead, and the March 11th massacre of 17 civilians, the tide of this war has turned decisively against the United States. Now is the time to throw in the towel, bring all the troops home today. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. The results are now in from most of the Joint Spring Offensive by Occupy D.C., the Anarchist Alliance DC Network. There was a taste of things to come with an April Fool's March targeting Monsanto, among other corporations, but the weighted blows began to fall in the week of April 16th to 22nd, culminating in repeat disruption of delegates to the spring meetings of the IMF and the World Bank. Since the IMF meetings coincided with Earth Day, Occupy DC declared it to be Occupy Earth Week. After a relatively low-key visit to the American Petroleum Institute on the 16th of April, things began heating up when protesters stormed the grounds of the Canadian Embassy on the 17th of April and disrupted an event just inside over the Alberta tar sands mining. That project produces the oil the Keystone XL pipeline was meant to export. Here's what things sounded like as Occupy DC converged on the embassy.
To make a future impossible for humanity! For exploiting the Alberta tar sands! Keystone Pipeline is not the problem.
The Keystone Pipeline is not the problem.
The Alberta tar sands are the problem.
The Alberta tar sands are the problem.
It's the nation of Canada.
It's the nation of Canada.
Cares about their own grandchildren.
Cares about their own grandchildren.
They will stop.
They will stop.
The exploitation.
The exploitation.
Of the Alberta tar sands.
Of the Alberta tar sands.
Which will not sustain.
Which will not sustain.
It's only two of them.
There's
only two of them.
Everybody out of Canada.
Go, go. Cops began showing up. The warning to get out of Canada went out. The protesters scattered to the winds. Not one was caught. On Wednesday, the 18th of April, protesters repeated this performance by storming the building housing the American Natural Gas Association, which promotes destructive hydrofracking for gas. Protesters got past security and went up the stairs, only to find the 8th floor doors were locked. After charging back down the stairs, Occupy DC had this to say about gas fracking.
That's the problem.
Morning, Thursday the 19th of April, was scheduled for a third visit to Monsanto, also known as Monsatan, to protest their role in genetic engineering, seed patents, and attempts to gain total control of the world's food supply. Since this protest was expected, it was cut short, with everyone returning to McPherson Square, waiting out the cops, then storming the offices of Cargill, another purveyor of pesticide-dependent genetically engineered seeds. April, things started getting really intense, the IMF and World Bank spring meetings got underway. First up, the 10 a.m. protest in front of the offices of BP on the anniversary of the worst oil spill in U.S. history. Protesters marched on the building, and this time, instead of storming the building, somebody dumped oil in front of the doors from a man-sized imitation of an oil drilling rig. One person was arrested, and one more detained as more protesters dumped what they labeled as Corexit, the same stuff BP used in a failed attempt to clean up the Gulf of Mexico.
BP!
BP!
Help me! Help me!
Not happy about
this. Few bucks! Make this better!
She didn't even drop it!
Shame!
Shame! That is oil plus Corexit dropped in front of BP's corporate headquarters in D.C. Unlike in the Gulf, protesters were not actually using Corexit, instead using some non-toxic facsimile. That evening, still the 20th of April, protesters marched and rode bikes into an insane level of afternoon traffic created by police checkpoints of the IMF meetings. They were soon heckling delegates at a variety of entrances to the meetings.
Get them out of our way.
Delegates are wearing tags around their neck. You should tell them what you think. Let them know.
Next morning dawned early as the Anarchist Alliance, DC Network, and Occupy DC marched on the IMF meetings for another round of delegate disruption and heckling. This time, activists had a new tactic, climbing ropes. Ropes were deployed in the streets with banners draped over them, forcing delegates to step over and in some cases nearly trip over the ropes. Another rope was tied to the police barricades and protesters bent their backs in a tug of war with the police, pulling the barricades into the street in an attempt to take them down.
Sir, long shirts, what do you say?
Oh, pulling down the barricades. Beautiful.
You're
just gonna cut it. That's the first time. You're gonna use steel cable. Luckily, that wasn't steel. Lone shark, lone shark.
What do you say?
How many kids did you
kill today?
Lone shark. What do you say?
That's the first time protesters have tried to pull the barricades down here since I think 2000. About a half an hour later came two very violent arrests. One woman was thrown down to the street, receiving bruises to both her face and back, as well as cuts on her face and smashed glasses. Brutality charges are pending against the police.
Oh, they just put him on someone's car. Her.
Manhandler, Jesus Christ!
Shame!
Is that necessary?
None of that violence deterred protesters from going back out that night for a round of storming delegate hotels. Protesters managed to storm the Washington Circle Hotel and nearly managed to enter the Mayflower Hotel in addition. Again, police responded with violence. One person is still recovering from a concussion caused by a club blow to the head as this is being recorded.
Where'd it go?
good now. That's good.
Mike check.
These plainclothes police.
Are here to serve mass murderers. They abuse our brothers. They are not your fucking friends.
Do
not speak to them. Under any circumstances.
Protesters went out for a fourth and final round of heckling IMF delegates on Sunday, the 22nd of April, Earth Day itself, pouring rain. The final score for Occupy Earth Week was 4 buildings stormed, 4 rounds of delegate heckling, 3 people arrested, at least 2 protesters injured by police violence, and 1 set of police barricades nearly towed away down the street by protesters using climbing rope while delegates were trying to climb over other ropes. CEO of Marriott is also on the board at Walmart. On the 26th of April, he got an unpleasant little surprise at a Marriott in Washington, D.C. as members of Respect D.C. showed up, dropped a banner inside the Marriott, and protested against plans to open multiple Walmart stores in D.C.
Walmart Green has got to go. Hey, hey! Oh, oh.
Keep coming back to these hotels until Walmart is held accountable for this bribery scandal and signs the community benefits agreement here in D.C.
Now, the problems at Walmart are so fundamental that it takes a lot more than a community benefits agreement to fix them. The only good Walmart in D.C. is no Walmart in D.C. under any conditions, but any reason for opposing Walmart's a good one.
DJ Munch, Chocolate City, this is movement music.
Have you heard the news?
Walmart's coming.
To Georgia Avenue, uptown, ain't that something?
Something.
Small businesses, shop owners, hearts pumping, cause they know their livelihoods is about to take a thumping. You can't compete with a superstore who's an importer of slave labors. Craftsmanship, low price to flip, to undercut the market, hand over fist.
Walmart
is infamous for the way they behave. Low wage pay, treat the workers like slaves. Employees who try to unionize, soon find themselves in unemployment lines. The way they treat women needs improving. 1.6 million sisters are suing them for being paid less than their male equivalent. On these issues and more, we can't afford to be ignorant.
Keep DC Walmart free.
It won't benefit you or me.
They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists stop to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
This is the Funkinest Journalist with your 3 Walmart commandments.
squash competition by underselling. Step 2, pay workers nothing and block unionization. Step 3, take all that money, put it into the Walton Family Foundation, and turn that into political influence to protect yourself and make even more.
Walmart. It's not a good fit for Chocolate City. Let me holla black at you with the skinny. Important that you clearly understand and remember DC doesn't work with the right wing agenda. The Walton families are big contributors to bigoted representatives and senators. Trent Lott, Sinister, Strom Thurmond, similar Confederate, state loving George Bush ministers. Oversee a plantation mentality. Results in black and brown casualties. Statehood opposition for the district has been supported by Walmart's mischief. The D.C. Voting Rights Act was defeated. Assisted via Walmart PACs. And now they wanna come here to see their money stack. Stay up on the facts. Chocolate City, don't relax and fight back.
Keep D.C. Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists out to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
Keep DC Walmart free is an emerging activist group of DC residents stepping up to challenge the corporate big box invasion of Chocolate City. Walmart has plans to establish 4 stores in DC by 2012. Walmarts in DC will threaten small businesses, cause loss of more jobs than it will bring to the community, and lower the wage standards for all workers. To find out more and get involved, visit walmartfreedc.org.
On the 18th of April, D.C. residents concerned about the severe cuts to housing programs in Mayor Gray's budget for fiscal year 2013 came together both in front of the Wilson Building and inside the Wilson Building at a hearing on the budget. Out front, here's what some people had to say about the mayor's disastrous proposal to balance the budget on the backs of the poor.
The budget disappears before your very eyes. But before it disappears, let's see what's in the budget. First, we have the Home Purchase Assistance Program, DC's premier program for helping people become homeowners who've never been homeowners in DC before. Who here has used the HPAT program? Woo! Nice one, y'all. Then we have Permanent Supportive Housing, or Housing First. This is the program that we use in order to provide housing and services for people in DC who are currently homeless or at risk of homelessness. Then we have the Local Rent Supplement Program, a voucher program that helps make housing affordable to DC's lowest income residents. And finally, the Housing Production Trust Fund, a program that DC set up to make sure that there would always be money in DC for affordable housing. It can go to because it has a dedicated source, dedicated by the city, to affordable housing. But watch! In 2013, this could start to disappear. Are you ready? First up, the Home Purchase Assistance Program. Ta-da! $5 million slated to be disappeared from the Home Purchase Assistance Program. But wait, you're not impressed yet? Perhaps more could disappear. Next, we may see the Housing Production Trust Fund, $20 million disappearing from the Housing Production Trust Fund. You're booing, are you not impressed? Let me explain what this could mean to you. 400 affordable units that would have been produced with the Housing Production Trust Fund. That's how much could be lost. 100 HPAT recipients that would have been able to buy their homes, disappearing.
Yeah. Isn't that what the developers want?
But wait, you say there's so much affordable housing left. Hardly anything has disappeared. Do not be concerned. 0 new people will be supported by the Local Rent Supplement Program and Housing First this year.
Zero? Who?
You're still not impressed, but well, perhaps you do not understand. I need another volunteer. Janelle. At the same time as our amazing, incredible, disappearing housing budget, we have growing need! The city is experiencing programs. Over 400 families are currently living in hotels or in DC General.
Yes.
When we talk about that, an average family by this definition includes two children. So that means that there are about 800 children who are living in hotels in a DC General. There are over 450,000 people with a severe housing burden. That means they're paying more than half of their income in their rent.
Yes.
With half your income being spent, how are you supposed to pay for your kids' school supplies? How are you supposed to pay to take the bus to work?
You can't.
You can't, she says. And over 20,000 low-cost homes have been lost in D.C. through condo conversions or other processes. Affordable housing in the open market, it's disappearing on its own without any of these budget tricks. So, in closing, we're at risk of having $25 million worth of affordable housing programs disappear and other programs affect no additional people. If you want to help stop these programs from disappearing, there'll be many more ways that you can get involved throughout the program. Thank you.
Yeah.
Councilman Brown.
Councilman Brown, you are just in time.
Well, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We're having a housing hearing today. We have them all day long. But I just recessed one of them because I wanted to make sure I could come out and say hello to you. Because you are the folks that are going to make the difference as we go through this budget cycle with all the emails you're going to send to talk about restoring the Housing Production Trust Fund, right?
Yeah.
To restoring the HPAP cuts, right?
Right.
Yeah. And local rent supplement program,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Anything we can do to make sure that we let folks in this building know that affordable housing has to be at the top of everyone's to-do list.
Yeah. Yeah.
As you've probably heard me say many times, and you'll hear me say it many more times, I don't mind new people coming in our city. Come one, come on, because it's good for our tax base. We will welcome you. But we shouldn't kick the people out that have been here a long time and make room for the new people. And as long as we want to have economic diversity, and make sure if we want a teacher, a police officer, a firefighter, or a retired senior to still live in our city if they want to be here, they should be able to do that.
Yeah.
And just because other cities are doing it a different way doesn't mean we have to follow their lead.
Right.
If we want economic diversity, we should have that here in our city here in Washington, D.C. I happen to be a third-generation Washingtonian. I've been fortunate enough to travel. I've seen Boston. I've seen San Francisco. I don't want to be those cities. I want to be D.C.
Yes.
One way to be D.C. is to make sure that whether you have a doctor and a lawyer on the street, you can also have a teacher and a police officer as well.
That's right.
And that's what we need to fight for. So we need your advocacy. We need your emails. We need your phone calls. Stay strong, as you know. I'm trying to float an idea right now that I've been doing for a couple of weeks. This one time, I've never heard about the furlough restorers.
Right.
Government workers got some money taken from them over the last couple of years because of some budget cuts, and we had some forecasting that didn't quite work out, so we had surplus dollars. Now there's some talk about restoring some of those funds to the government workers to give them some of their money back. Well, it was interesting. The same number it cost to restore the furlough dollars was the exact amount to restore the Housing Production Trust Fund dollars. So I said, well, wait a minute. Why should we pit those two important issues against each other? So I'm working on a compromise now with my colleagues and other members in this building to see if we can do 2 days of furlough restore, and let's do the rest of the money to the Housing Production Trust Fund. And then at the same time, we can put the other 2 days for the furlough restore on the priority list because we want to restore them because it was money that was taken that should not have been. But let's not take affordable housing and make it pitted against folks getting their money back for furloughs. Let's do both if we can. We get more surplus dollars, we can take care of everybody. But affordable housing has to be a number one priority. Thank you very much.
All day, your support for affordable housing.
Now, I'm telling you right now, these programs that was once that was up here should not be on the chopping block. It should not be on the chopping block. You don't have to walk far from here to see a homeless person. You don't have to go too far to see a family out there that's homeless. And this don't make no sense because we shouldn't have been going through this each and every year. Because every year
We go through the same thing, the same dance, the same song, the same scenario, and they still don't seem to get it. Housing is a human need. Deal with human life. Plain and simple. There's no more, no less than that. And these programs, I can tell you right now, standing here before you, what these programs have done for me. The Housing Production Trust Fund, my apartment is beautiful. It looked like a condo. Okay? The rent supplement program, it helped subsidize my rent to make it affordable for me to stay in that apartment. Without that, I could be right back out in the street. So I was once homeless for 2 years. I don't have no intention of going back out there. And I will continue to fight, and we all will continue to fight until they get this and get this down once and for all and make these programs permanent and make them stable and make them untouchable by any cuts. Thank you.
And having houses to be funded.
You ain't that old.
They say, I'm 64. God is good. And also, I've been homeless as well. It's an honor to be here to stand here among all of us. But we have to stand together and fight and make sure city council do right by us. They keep giving us our broken promises, telling they're going to do better and do more and take our money and run with it. We're going to say no more. We're going to stand and fight what we believe in. Our kids, we got over 3,000 kids that are homeless right now. So we need to make sure that the money's in the budget so we can do what we want for our families, give them homes, and make places to live. So we won't have to go through the same process over and over again.
On the 28th of April, women's rights activists marched from the White House to the U.S. Capitol opposing the Republican Party's war on women. At the rally that was held in Upper Senate Park, a speaker from Catholics for Choice had this to say about efforts by Catholic bishops to restrict legal access to abortion and cut off funding for contraception and health care plans.
The vast majority who disagree with the Vatican's on sex, sexuality, reproductive health, even birth control. Catholics make up a quarter of the U.S. population. There are 271 U.S. bishops. There are 68 million U.S. Catholics. The Catholic hierarchy claims to represent these Catholics, but we know this isn't true. The 68 million of us, we are the church. We are the everyday Catholics support policies that enable men and women to make their own decisions about whether and when to have children, and the laws that ensure that health care is accessible and comprehensive for everyone. We respect women and their moral agency to make the decisions that affect their lives and that of their families. Catholic teaching compels us to listen to our own individual conscience in moral decision making and to respect others' rights to do the same. We know 98% of sexually active Catholics do this every day because they use birth control that's been banned by the bishops. The Catholic tradition for social justice calls on us to advocate for the poor, the marginalized, the least of us. 85% of Catholics believe in extending birth control coverage to those who can't afford it. That's more than the general population thinks. The Catholic hierarchy and their lobbying arm, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, have been really active in recent days and months and years and decades. But we know that the Catholics don't want the bishops to lead them on public policy in these matters. In 2011, a survey said that 10%, only 10% of Catholics think that church leaders should have the final say about birth control and other health issues. Our voices need to be heard. Everyday Catholics support policies that take care of the whole person. Reproductive health care is health care. Access to safe abortion is important for women's health. Our Catholic faith charges us to respect religious pluralism and religious freedom. The bishops want to make this discussion about religious freedom, not about the right to decent, affordable health care for women. But whose conscience is being protected by the bishops' policies? Who is in danger of having their religious freedom compromised? Not the bishops. Religious freedom is an expansive idea. It has two sides. It's about freedom of religion and freedom from religion. It's not about telling people what they can and cannot believe or practice, but rather about respecting an individual's right to follow our own conscience in religious beliefs and practices and how we make our own moral decisions. While the bishops and their allies have been talking a lot about what they think is important, we know that all that noise can't hide the fact that the voices of the rank and file Catholics are missing from that chorus. If the bishops were to listen to these voices, they'd hear, in principle and in practice, that the majority of Catholics want equal access to comprehensive health care, including reproductive health care. To lift the voices of the millions of everyday Catholics who support access to contraception and other healthcare services, not in spite of our Catholic teachings, but because of them.
Amen.
Women's health and their rights are Catholic values. 98% of Catholic women know it, and we're here to tell the bishops so they know it too.
Another woman speaking out at the April 28th rally against the GOP's war on women compared the increasing number of laws, particularly in southern states, restricting a woman's control over her own body, to the sort of measures that are taken by factory farmers to exploit animals.
Letter to legislators. Unlike calves and pigs, I am not a beast of burden. I am a woman, and I have these human rights. The right to life. The right to privacy, the right to freedom, the right to bodily integrity, the right to decide how and when I reproduce. The policies that you support strip me and other women of our rights and deprive us of dignity and freedom in the following ways. And even though I know it would be nice to keep things lighthearted, it's going to be impossible for the next minute and a half. Criminalizing pregnancy and imprisoning women who have miscarried, have accidents, are suffering from substance abuse, or have had to make sad decisions regarding their pregnancies, and then compounding the harm by forcing women to carry dying or inevitably dead fetuses when they otherwise wouldn't. Inhibiting, humiliating, and punishing women for their reproductive choices, such as mandating permission slips from men, requiring we know best waiting periods, or forcing women to undergo medically unnecessary and involuntary bodily penetration, what we otherwise call rape. Seizing women, disabling them, or sacrificing their lives by withholding and delaying medical treatment, or forcing them to undergo cesarean deliveries. Lastly, depriving women of their ability to make decisions that allow them to earn a living, be paid fairly and equitably, and support themselves and their families. By pursuing a single-minded and perverse agenda designed to curtail women's reproductive freedom, you sacrifice our health and the well-being of our families. I morally object to your consigning me, my daughters, and yours to function as reproductive animals for society. Just because I can get pregnant does not mean that I cannot think clearly, ethically, morally, rationally about my body, human life, or the consequences of my actions. Does not mean that I do not have rights when I am pregnant. I have responsibility, but am powerless. You have power, but are irresponsible with my rights. by not trusting me, you forced me to trust you, and you are not trustworthy. What you are doing is disgraceful, hypocritical, and corrupt. And no, I am not crazy. I am angry. These are chaos bills and laws, wasteful of time, money, and lives, obscure and enduring, an unchangeable truth. Safe and effective family planning is the transformative social justice accomplishment of the 20th century. Your actions betray your clearly biased commitment to individual rights and limited government. Your actions betray our nation's fundamental beliefs, deprive me of the right to life, privacy, and equal protection under the law. These rights are mine, and they are the rights of all women. We are here today because women have yet to be fully recognized as citizens with agency in both the private and public spheres. So I close with two things. One, just to be clear, this is not about women hating men. This is about women and men joining together to fight for equality and to end oppression. All to not sit quietly when you encounter bias, sexism, and misogyny. And although I know that we all need to vote, and more women need to run, and we need to elect women and make sure we have representation, I think it is equally important for everybody to speak in ways that children can hear and to say things loudly and clearly in defense of equal rights for girls and women.
On the 25th of April, animal rights activists showed up in front of the D.C. headquarters of the USDA, demanding an end to their allowing laboratories a day license to kill animals, not only as part of their so-called experiments, but also by just plain neglect or for matters of convenience. U.S. Department of Agriculture, protesters moved on to the offices of AstraZeneca and Bayer, two notorious customers of puppy-punching Huntington Life Sciences.
Drunk and on drugs, I don't literally Nazi scum. Bayer was a part owner of Auschwitz. Protesters in front of this building. They did their part. Why don't you do yours?
The other offices, the other businesses in this building.